This is RSBNB Update, episode 612, recorded Thursday, March 30th, 2017. Getting Lucky. Hello, everybody, and welcome to RSBNB Update, the RuneScape podcast that, well, initially blazed the trail on RuneScape podcasting, and since then, you know, just aims to keep you guys up to date with everything going on in RuneScape and, you know, what Jagex is doing and what Jagex says. Sirion and myself are here this week with the addition of Chodo, who goes by Chodo3000 in RuneScape. He's a Clan Quest member. Welcome to both of you.
Hello, Shane. Thank you for inviting me. And hello, Sirion. It's lovely to hear your voice again.
I hear that every now and then.
Yeah. You know, Sirion might be giving us a performance before he departs at the end of April. Rumor is he can sing quite well.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Oh, I mean, come now. That's got to be true, right?
It has been told that I sing well, but on the other side, I was in a musical many, many years ago.
Oh, and really? Which one?
It was one for church, and they had to actually rewrite the part because they couldn't let me sing because it was so bad.
Oh, really?
I'm not making this up.
I mean, so, your singing was that bad, they had to rewrite it.
Yep.
Really?
This is material for Clan Quest. You shouldn't have said it.
All right.
The rumors that I can sing well are definitely not true, so.
Well, I wasn't there for that, so I wasn't there to record it. But anyways, this week's RS update is one that is focused on luck and the luck rework that Mod Timbo has been working on for a long time and became part of Game Jam. So the luck rework finally arrived this week, and to start off with, Jagex gave a bit of a rundown of how luck works, specifically rare drops from slayers, unique drops from bosses, clue specific rewards from clue scrolls, favorable skilling procs, and accessing the rare drop table, granting an additional drop, not a replacement. So basically, luck now affects four different tiers 1 through 4. The first one is what you would expect, level 1 to 50 slayer monsters, easy clues, and the entry-level bosses of the KBD and Giant Mole, also an increased chance to access the rare drop table. Tier 2 is for level 51 to 80 slayer monsters, skilling, including mining gems, jeweled statuettes, tradable scepter from Pyramid Plunder, opening shade chests in the Flash Powder Factory Rubble Searching, medium clues and bosses including the Chaos Elemental, Kalfite Queen, Exiled Kalfite Queen, God Wars Dungeon 1, not including Nex, Barrows and the Dagonoth Kings, and an increased chance to access the rare drop table. Tier 3 is 81 to 99 and higher level skilling areas such as rare drops from Elven Pickpocketing, the Black Ibis outfit, improved loot from Kingly Implings, and improved chance of receiving the Scepter of the Gods, as well as hard clues. Then your bosses for Tier 3 are the Queen Black Dragon, next God Wars 2, Kalfite King, and Corp Beast. And then Tier 4 is everything below, so all Slayer monsters, all skilling, elite clues and lower, and then every other boss that I did not mention, of course, including Angel of Death, Talos Raids, Rise of the Six, Virago, Araxor, and everything else. So that's the four tiers of luck that we now have in RuneScape. And I think one thing is obvious right from the get-go on this is that if you are a higher-level player, you're definitely going to want to pick up the Tier 3 or Tier 4 luck ring, because if you ask yourself, what is Tier 2 going to do for me, it's really not going to do that much if you're a high-level endgame player, right?
Yeah, completely. Yes.
I mean, 81 to 99 Slayer monsters, okay, that's good. But high-level skilling and hard clues, I know most of the clues I do personally are elite clues, so none of the other items would help me. So that already puts me all the way up to Tier 4. So there's already some luck-enhancing items in the game that I figured we could go through, and that's the Collector's Insignia, which is a Tier 2 luck item, comes from Barbarian Assault. And when you charge it, it moves all the way up to Tier 3. and charges will deplete based on the mechanic that already exists on the item. The luck potion is now tier 2, and at 77 herb lore, it can be combined with 6 onyx bolt tips to make it an enhanced luck potion, which imparts tier 3 luck benefits. That seems pretty expensive.
I mean, getting an onyx in general is really expensive, so going for the more permanent,
Option
of the ring
is the way to go.
But it's also really, really expensive. This is sort of a midway, but I definitely agree that it seems that if you want to do any proper luck improvements, you want to go for the ring, unless you really, really have a different ring you want to use, but I can't find of something that would really warrant using enhanced luck potions.
You know, all the rings that we're going to be talking about do have stat bonuses with the appropriate levels. So it's not as though, you know, you're giving up a few points of extra damage or whatnot, that you do get that for using these new luck rings. So that is fine. Also, you can have the leprechaun hat, which is a tier 2 luck item, as well as the rabbit's foot, which is a tier 1 luck item. So you can use all of those as you normally would for some luck items if you don't want to make a ring. You know, I'm not going to really talk about the tier 1 and tier 2 rings, because that's basically the ring of luck, which involves cut lapis lazuli, as well as the silver bar and ring mold. So it's basically one of those silver jewelries that we got last year. Also, the Ring of Wealth is now the tier 2 luck item. Everyone has a bajillion of those, unless you have been hiding under a rock for the last number of years. So I think where we can best start is with the tier 3 and tier 4 luck items, which is, of course, for tier 3. The Ring of Fortune, which has level 50 ring stats and requires 72 magic, 72 crafting and 87 magic to make, as well as a gold bar and onyx ring. So, you know, tier 3, onyx gem, you know, and this is the one that I think everyone can get easily. Now, I don't know how many people are going to want to go for this one, but it seems like, you know, okay, I just want to access some of these new luck benefits. This is what you'd make right off the bat, right?
I mean, the bosses it gives access to are, I think, the bosses that the more average player would be comfortable killing. So that we're looking at Queen Black Dragon, God Wars Dungeon, both of them, I think, if I remember correctly.
I think just God Wars 1. Let me double check that. Let's see. So a tier 3 luck item is... Oh, yeah, tier 3 is God Wars Dungeon 2, and tier 2 is God Wars Dungeon, right? So, yeah, both God Wars Dungeons.
Does tier 3 actually also give the tier 2 bonuses? Because that is something that is sort of unclear from the post, but if you read it all quite literally, it seems that...
Right, it doesn't say, so it's only the one.
Which limits the usability of tier 3 quite a lot.
I think they should have made them impart the benefits of all the lower ones, because...
I agree.
Like, let's just say you're wanting to do some easy clues, you know, just for the heck of it, and who's going to get a tier 1 luck item just for doing that? I mean, it doesn't really make sense to do that. So that's one thing I think they should have changed with it. It's minor, minor niggle, but, you know, I guess we do have to take what we're given.
I'd like to make a comment on tier 1 before we move to tier 3 and 4. And I like the first tier of the ring, because mainly it's free to play. And that's something I see really important, because as a free Iron player, Iron Man player, I think this is really important. I'm disappointed, though, that free to plays cannot make or obtain as a drop, you know, the ring. So you right. gotta trade it or buy it on the grand exchange. But yes, I think it's really significant. I have a lot of friends who play only in free to play, and all they can do nowadays is kill the King Black Dragon or the Giant Mole, and this is really a good update for them as well.
You know, you're entirely right in that. Normally, we just gloss over the free-to-play side of the updates. And, you know, there were some other free-to-play updates this week as well. We'll talk about those a bit later, specifically relating to the reworked quest. So, yeah. You know, I think you are right that it is important to shine the spotlight on free-to-play, you know, just for what free-to-play is. So, thank you for that. All right. So tier 3 obviously can only be used by the things that are mentioned there, and I don't think that's as much of an issue with tier 2 because everyone has Ring of Wealth hanging around, right?
Yeah, it's just like what if you like just want to go a bit lower, like have slayer creatures that are a bit lower, or maybe some of your skilling levels are a bit lower, and you're like, especially for Slayer, you're sort of limited wearing a worse ring, even in terms of stats, to get the luck bonuses. And then it doesn't feel right. Like, if you get an Onyx ring, I think you can sort of be expected to be able to obtain a Dragonstone ring quite easily.
Yeah.
And the same for, like, the Tier 1 ring. It feels a bit silly to sort of make that separate. And while there is... sometimes, while it is interesting to have the player sort of choose between do I want the better stats, do I want the luck, you have to realize that there is already that trade-off a little bit because there are rings that have better stats and are higher level. So you already have to make a trade-off. And, I mean, this is just mostly annoying. You have to keep all the tiers of rings, like tier 1, 2, and 3 in your bank if you want to get those and not get the really, really expensive and hard to obtain tier 4 ring.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping they're going to change that.
Well, should we move on to tier 4 then?
Yes, let's move on to tier 4.
All right. So this is a level 60 ring, tier 4, and, you know, imparts the benefits of all the previous tiers, which is what we wanted. Requires 91 crafting, 87 magic, and 107 invention to make. You need the 107 invention to make the alchemical onyx, which is, of course, a modified onyx, which, you know, is something that people have been having a few problems with and has actually caused the clue scroll market to jump up because...
yeah, the fortunate components.
Yeah, the alchemical onyx requires 50 fortunate components, which comes from disassembling clue scroll items. And when you think about it, how many people have been disassembling clue scroll items that would give these? Most of the time, you just dump it on the Grand Exchange for 10 or 30K, right? So,
yeah, exactly.
You know, I got to say, this is a great time to be doing clue scrolls.
I really like the sort of self-reinforcing mechanic here. Like, this, like, more luck is going to get more treasure tower items in the economy, arguably, because there's a bigger chance of getting them. But to get those rings, you have to disassemble them, so they're also removed from the economy again. So what we see here is
Which rings are disassembled?
The treasure trial items are disassembled.
Okay. Yeah,
but they are disassembled to make the ring, so you get this loop, and in the end, like, the same number of items is in the market.
And,
so,
you know, this is classic Mod Timbo, and, you know, you can see his fingerprints all over this, because this is something that Mod Timbo has talked about before and implements quite often in any update that he ends up working on. So, you know, an interesting thing for me is that I bought an Onyx gem just to make sure I could have one, and Onyxes were actually selling below the market value. Unfortunately, the alchemical Onyx, you can sell those on the exchange, but those are not purchasing for double the market value. So it's going to be a while before the economy equalizes on those and people are going to start selling those rather than using them themselves. And, I mean, 107 invention is pretty steep. So,
for instance, I really like the invention requirement because I think 107 is like a bit too much, but that's me speaking who hasn't maxed the skill yet. But considering that a player, I don't know, got 99 in 22 hours is rather logical. But I have seen invention as a rather useless skill. It has, for me, it has very little benefits. So having a ring that can boost your luck like this one that you can unlock only at 107 invention. I think it's a very good point that that they made when creating the ring.
Oh yeah, it's a very fair level, I think, and it gives a use to the invention skill, like you said. So I mean, there's nothing wrong with having that component there, and you know, in some ways, if you don't have the money to pour into a ring like this, it means that, okay, so I actually need to invest in this skill to be able to create it if I don't want to dump, you know, whatever it would be going for right now, 10, 20 mil maybe on it. Also worth noting is that you can purchase the actual rings themselves on the exchange. You just need to enchant them yourself, which I think is something that most people can do. So, you know, it's not, you know, a huge problem in order to acquire one of these Luck of the Dwarves rings if you have the money or if you have the invention level. So I think that's fine. And, you know, I ultimately think that we're a long time waiting in having clue scrolls be affected by these rings, and I think that's good. It's same as skilling stuff. I mean, there's always some idea behind the scenes that maybe skilling might have been involved in it, but now we know for sure what exactly is going on behind the scenes, which is great. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with these rings per se. Do you guys see anything wrong with these rings, or do you have anything else to add on them before we to the elephant in the room?
I think we have to congratulate Timbo on how clever this all fits together. I mean, this is a very, very solid update. It's something we wanted, but if you look at the meat of it, it's not gonna completely change the economy. It's going to have a minimal effect on it, and that is so very impressive. Like, the only real effect I can see on the market is, well, the Ring of Wealth is dropping in value, the Onyx is probably getting more value, but I think that will all balance out really quickly, and it's not that we will all of a sudden see a lot more of the treasure tire items. The only thing we have to like keep an eye out for is what is going to happen with things like unique drops from monsters. Like, are we going to see more drops from high-level bosses? Is that going to be a big thing? Are those going to drop in value? And are we okay with that? But otherwise, this is really, really cleverly done. It all fits together very well. So I'm really impressed.
Yeah, I think luck is a very important. I don't think it is a really important factor in game, and it's a detail because RuneScape doesn't have the basis in whether or not you are lucky and you get good drops from bosses or clue scrolls or whatever. And I think that's the great point, the detail, because I don't know. I think RuneScape is not made from huge updates like, I don't know, Briefliness or Chelos or God Was Dungeon, but the details like the lodestone system, the tool belt, I don't know, the money pouch, and now it's luck. Luck is reworked, and I don't know, it makes the players, if not happier, at least willing to play the mini games or to do more scrolls or to go and go kill some bosses, you know?
Yep.
I mean, we have to realize that for years, people did not even know how the drop system worked. Like, rare drop table and that kind of thing was all figured out by experimentation, lots of data, and lots of hours of looking at how stuff worked. Like, there was never an official idea of luck. And the Ring of Wealth existed. It improved drops, but nobody knew quite exactly how. And while over the years it has sort of been explained or formalized, the actual concept of luck with this update has now been formalized. And I think we have to consider that to be absolutely huge. And I think a move in the right direction. The question is, so last week we were mentioned, like, talking about this and wondering, how much information are we going to get? Are they going to be completely transparent about how luck works? Or
is it time for that time of the podcast?
Well, the question I want to ask is, like, the amount of data we got about this log rework, are we satisfied that this is sufficient, or do we think that there's still too much holding back on how the drop system actually works by Jagex?
Well, I could tell you that there is enough information out there for the four tiers of luck that we've been told about. And, you know, I think that ultimately there's something else that was discovered purely by accident this week. And it received no mention on this news posting at all. And it goes into exactly what you said about, are we being transparent enough with how luck is working? And the answer is, well, depending on the way you see things, there's a huge elephant in the room. There is an item in-game currently called Hazelmere Signet Ring that started off on the Grand Exchange at 10 million GP. It's going up to 11 million right now, but the street price of this item is north of one million. Cash stack. So this
is... For what I heard, like, the ring actually being sold is actually a rumor and nobody has ever found it yet, so...
Well, I mean, there's posts on the official forums that people are selling this, so...
Mm.
In the marketplace thread. So it definitely... Mm. It likely does exist. You know, in general, I think the consensus of this is that, you know, it... the person who was posting on one of these threads said that they got it from an elite clue scroll using their existing tier 4 luck ring. So, okay. So there's one thing that might be there. A very rare item on a clue scroll.
Well, apparently it really exists because I'm not sure if you're aware that one of ClanQuest members... have started like a worldwide search for the ring, and Motion is there, and he has said that the ring is not an April Fool's joke, as I first believed.
It's not an NPC drop.
No. Sorry, what?
You said the ring. Shani said that the ring is not an NPC drop.
No, that the ring was not an April Fool's joke.
Oh, okay. All right.
Because I the first thing I said, it was, this is a joke. This is not real.
Well, no, of course. But I mean, it's not a joke. I pulled it in from our Grand Exchange. So I was, you know, skeptical until I pulled the data in for the Grand Exchange stuff this week.
Well, but it wouldn't be the first time that Jagex put something in the Grand Exchange that doesn't exist. I don't know if you know about that sapphire necklace called the Thingy that you can actually search and see in the Grand Exchange, but it's currently unobtainable and doesn't exist in game. So that was my first reaction, like saying, this is not real, it's just a joke, but apparently it's not.
Yeah. So that leaves us the question, where does this ring come from? And ultimately, should Jagex have told us about this rig, and when will we get more data about this?
I think they should keep it as it is. I mean, I hope one of the players will eventually find it, and well.
Oh, never mind. Never mind. The person selling it on the exchange, Mod Shani, posted on the topic, said, "But you don't have one." Going to lock this thread.
Well, I had a suspicion.
There you go. There you go. And you know why I loved it? Because it's a mystery thing. You know, you remember one of the questions I made in another of these podcasts was whether you liked or not to be aware of the updates. I personally, I like the secrets and the surprises, and this is completely, for me, it's the best thing that entails the luck rework, this ring that is so mysterious and no one knows how to get it.
I'm a bit of a data nerd, and I find the way they presented the luck update to be misleading in terms of like adding more items to the game than there is. I mean, when I heard of it, I went back to the post. I read through it word for word. They never say that there's only four lock tiers. They never say there were no more items added, but it was heavily implied. So I find it sort of misleading. And while I like surprise updates, I find it an unpleasant experience to have like an update explained to you and then have things on purpose be left out. Like what I would have been okay with is saying there's a fifth tier and it does this and this and this, but we're not going to tell you how to get it,
that would have been good.
Because that's then the mystery stays, but you don't get this whole thing that you sort of imply something different. Because if they start doing this, how much can we still trust the news posts in the future?
Right. And
the news posts are the ground truth.
Yes. And, you know, I would have, you know, I think a little bit of mystery like that is fine. And I think hunting around for an item like this is good for the community. But what I think the problem is that this item is so rare, if it's actually out there, that it is going for multiple cash stacks. I don't think it's right to be putting something so mysterious that is going to be so rare and so expensive behind this level of mystery.
Yes.
It's dealing with an economy that is moving multiple cash stacks at a time if someone wants to purchase one of these rings, which I don't think is right.
I gotta say you have a point there, and because right now I know people that will pay whatever it takes to get that ring. I mean, if I went there and I said I have the ring and I'm selling it for 5 cash stacks, they would do it. There will be people that would do it, and that could be a problem for the economy. I really don't know, because I don't understand the implications of the economy. But well, I can agree to that point of yours.
Yeah.
I mean, by making it official that such a ring is there, you already reduce the chance and the opportunities you get for scams.
Right.
Because this is so shady right now. Like, the market around this ring is so, so shady.
Also, I'd like to say that we know that this is actually real because the Grand Exchange prices on these have moved over the past couple days. They wouldn't have moved if there were no rings on the exchange and there were no offers for the ring.
Can it not move just by there being offers? Does it have to be supply?
I think there has to be a supply, if I remember from how the exchange works.
Okay.
Yeah, but I can remember of this search that has been organized from everywhere. They said that the prices can change even if there is not a ring selling. Even if the item hasn't been offered yet, the prices can change. So that wouldn't mean that there is an actual ring out there.
Yep. Hmm. And
so the one problem with this is the mystery. But the second problem is this, right? We are talking about multi-cash stack.
Exactly. And that's my core problem with this.
Go for it.
I mean, you just said it. It's a multi-cash stack thing that's moving around. And, you know, this thing is probably worth at least one party hat of some color based on how it's there and how rare it is, just based on the pure desire to have it at this time. And when you get this ring, you don't even know what it's going to do aside from, you know, it's going to have tier 4 luck benefits. It might have tier 5 benefits. It might just be a reskin of tier 4 benefits that's extremely rare. We don't know what it does. So in that regard, that we don't know what it does, and the fact it's moving around for multi-cash stacks is what the core problem of this is. And, you know, I said I wanted more surprises this year, and I think Jagex is, you know, definitely playing to that factor here. But I don't know if it's right to put this in game. And I just love a mystery, so I'm not going to complain about it too much. But I don't know if it's right for the economy.
I mean, we are talking about an item here that because it is so rare, because it is so expensive, is at least for the next few weeks, it's going to be so limited to the RuneScape Elite. Like, I, in-game, am completely ignoring this. There is no benefit for me in worrying about this new ring, because it's completely inaccessible. It is something that caters to the fun of maybe 0.5%, maybe less, like really tiny fraction of the RuneScape community is really interested in this. And that feels wrong to me. It's not that it's so expensive. Like, expensive items, we know them. But the fact that by making it so expensive, you make it so inaccessible for the vast, vast majority of the players is, I feel, it just doesn't sit right with me.
Yeah.
And well, I think it's, as an elite, as you said, it's for the elite players, of course, because only the players that can afford it or can actually obtain it will be able to use it and to wear it. But it has some, when you say about the multiple cash tags and all that, I think that once the ring appears, if it does appear, but I think it will, if the ring actually appears, I, for example, maybe can obtain it by doing an elite clue scroll or however you can obtain it. It's not like, for instance, a party hat that it's currently unobtainable in any way other than by trading with another player. You cannot get a party hat. But I think maybe when it appears, the first week or the first year or whatever, the ring will cost billions of gold pieces. But with time, I think it wouldn't affect that much. That's my thought.
All right. You know, I personally don't want to speculate where this is going to come from. Various, you know, Google and whatnot say it's from clue scrolls or the rare drop table or something to do with that. But, you know, until we have more firm proof that people are getting this item, I think that's just idle speculation at this point by these people. And yeah. I personally wouldn't believe what they say on the internet. So we don't know where it is. And, you know, finally, just before we wrap this up, since, you know, we have talked about this elephant in the room for quite a while, do you guys think Jagex should have put this item in game? Shoto, yes, no?
Yes, I think it's a good addition, even though I can see the bad points of it, but I can agree with it.
All right. How about you, Sirion?
I think by limiting an actual useful item to the Elite, it was a mistake, and I'd rather have it be a more fun thing like the Totally Quackers title or the Hidden Gal. Like, I think putting a functional item behind such a fence is wrong.
All right. I'm going to actually go with Sirion on this one. You know, ordinarily, I don't think it would be too much of a problem to have a rare wild goose chase like this. But ultimately, when it comes down to, you know, such large economies here of GP moving back and forth, I don't think it's a good idea. So we'll,
I mean, mind,
definitely
mind
keep
you,
our eye on this.
Mind you that, like, I am sort of assuming here that the ring has unique functionality. Maybe it's just a tier 4 ring, but I just cannot imagine something so hidden to be not functional because aesthetics don't matter for a ring.
Yep. All right. So moving on to other things this week. The M-Catcher quest has been reworked, and you guys both had a look at this. So, Sirion, give us a walkthrough of how this new simple quest works.
All right. So M-Catcher used to be a quest where you went to Miss Gog in the Wizard's Tower. Wizard Miss Gog lost the beads to imps. They were eaten by imps. And you have to go and kill imps until they're dropped. The beads were actually tradable, so you could just go to the Grand Exchange and buy all four of them and hand them back, finish the quest that way. The alternative, of course, is killing imp upon imp until you finally get all the colors. You could get duplicates even, I think, so that you can return them. This, of course, is not a very fun and good quest, so it was reworked and basically replaced by an entirely new quest. So the story is still the same. You go to Wizard Mizgog, and he had a bit of a fight with Wizard Grey something?
Wizard Greyzag?
Greyzag, there you go. And the beads were spread out and along imps. But instead of having to kill imps, you now get the position of the four imps that have the beads, and they are actually placed at the four elemental altars.
Interesting.
Also, Wizard Mizgog is actually voice acted, and of course they had to change the dialogue. And right. They got around that by making Wizard Mizgog a bit paranoid and give you the instructions in a letter. So that was quite clever, I thought. But yeah, you go to like all the altars, and every altar has an imp. So the water altar is probably the first you go to because it's the closest by. And the imp at the water altar has a cold. So he asks for a bowl of hot water after you suggest that it's good against the cold. So you get a bowl of water. If you're a member, you heat it up on the furnace. If you are a free-to-play player, you have a problem because it's not a free-to-play item, so they hotfix it that you can use a cold bowl of water.
Ah, interesting.
They actually made a bit of a funny dialogue there because the imp has to heat it itself, so it's pretty funny. But as soon as you give it the bowl of hot water, it vomits up the bead and you can pick it up.
All right.
So, all right, and then you go to the fire altar where the next one is. That one is a bit violent, so you kill it. It has the normal stats of a normal imp, so that shouldn't be too difficult. Unless you just made the account and are not carrying any weapons, which makes which makes you run to the closest sword shop to get a free bronze sword. After killing the imp, it's not really killed, but it feels a bit bad and vomits up another bead. For the Earth Altar, you run into a very depressed imp, so you give it some pep talk, it vomits up its bead, you pick that up, and then you go to the Air Altar, where you do a race around the Air Altar by following checkpoints, 16 of them in total. And then, because the imp is so tired, he vomits up the last bead. You go back to the Wizard's Tower, hand in the beads, and quest complete. And the rewards are an amulet of accuracy, which you can buy again for 1500 GP in the future from Wizard Mizgog. And you get a magic lamp now instead of the normal magic XP originally. That will give 875 magic experience, which is enough to boost you from level 1 to level 8.
You know, I think that's so great that they have started giving the XP in the form of a lamp for some of these quests, you know, just to give people the option if they want to take it or not. So that's good.
So what Go on. Okay. What I really liked about this quest is the fact that the original imp catcher had no meaning at all. It was just... It was a bit worthless, and what they have made it now is they have made it a quest that you can do right from the start as like a level 1 player. I literally made a new account, ran to the Wizard's Tower, did the quest, and then I had to get a sword to kill the imp, but like you can do it on like a completely vanilla account. But what it does is it exposes you as a player to the four elemental altars, and you might not know what they are for yet, because you might not have figured out what runecrafting is for. But by being there, by seeing them, it sort of you become aware of their existence, and that might very well help people pick up runecrafting earlier, because the Rune Mysteries quest was completely removed from the game.
Right.
A couple of years back, which was the original introduction to the runecrafting skill. So all in all, I think this is a very, very clever we
and
were
you actually
in.
Go in the altars or just outside?
No, just outside.
Okay, fair enough.
But you become aware of the location, and I mean, it's really cleverly done. It makes the quest as much effort as before, basically. It's no longer RNG based, which is good. It's still very simple and quick, but you learn so much more of the world during the experience. And I was really disappointed that it got like a side note mention. Well, this is in fact a complete quest rework, which is very, very important and improves the beginning player experience by a lot. The only bad thing about the quest I would mention is that to get to the Earth Altar, you have to go outside of the big starter zone, which is surrounded by these guards. And even though they actually made some changes in the patch notes to make the Earth Altar accessible for a level 1 player, or level 3 player, I should say.
An aggressive mugger near the Earth Altar has been removed.
Correct. But they haven't extended the starter area to include it, which I think is sort of mixed signals on this quest. So it's minor, but that's the only real problem I had with this quest.
All right.
Yeah, what I liked mainly is that the quest doesn't involve combat only. When you talked about, for instance, the race that you must do with one of the imps, that makes the quest more dynamic than it used to be. And I don't know, it's at least more interesting, and you could say even more funny. And my main issue with combat is that to do this quest, I created a hardcore Iron Man account and I died to the imp. So, so I had to create another.
Lucky then.
No. Luck is never with me. But so I had to create another account, but this time I leveled my smithing to level 2. I made a bronze mace and I punched Dame's face. But yeah, I really liked it. And about the reward, when you completed the original quest, you talked about the Amulet of Accuracy.
Right.
If you were an Iron Man player, I think a free Iron Man player, maybe a member, no. But if you were a free Iron Man player, you couldn't get the Accuracy Amulet back. So if you lose it, there was no chance to get it back. It's not a huge thing because the Amulet of Accuracy is only for very low levels, but it is an improvement, let's say, basically for Iron Man or even free to play. And the magic lamp, I really like that because I don't know if a skiller just want another quest point, they can do it and no problem with the magic experience, you know.
Yeah, you know, that's really great. So you know, I think Jagex is really up on the quality of life things that need to happen like this. I'm sure there's other quests out there that new players playing through them would feel that could be reworked like this, and I'm sure Jagex has a list internally of what they'd like to do. So overall, pretty good is what you guys are both saying, right?
Yeah, I think there's one J mod that's working on these. I think it's actually the same mod that even did like the Shield of Arath and Heroes quests improvements. And like, there's a whole list of quests that mod is working on. I forgot the name. I'm really, really sorry. I would love to give the credit, but I don't know the name from the top of my head. But definitely really impressed with the work that this JMod did in their free time. There's like while we're at it, like, this quest does expose a problem I sort of encountered during my experience to get to this quest. So,
and just before we do this, we'll say that this is entirely free to play, what you're talking about right now, and the new the new player experience, which is very important to the game. So listen up, folks.
Yes.
So people that have made an Iron Man account might have experienced this. I did. I had not. So for me, this was the first time in years that I made an account and actually started in the world as a free-to-play player. And there were a few obstacles in the way. So first of all, I did not like the registration experience. You cannot use, like, we have this entire focus on like safety, account security. Yes. So I care about my security as well. So what I do is I use a password manager. So the first thing I did, I was made an account, email address, go to my password manager, generate a password, put it in. It didn't work. Why did it not work? Apparently you're not allowed to put symbols in your password. Okay, that limits my password characters to letters and numbers, which is not ideal, but I can change my generated password. So I changed it, put it in, made an account, all nice. I opened up NXT, and I was playing on my main account, which is a member, so I logged out and tried to log in with my new account, but pasting passwords doesn't work. You can't paste anything into the NXT client. Mm-hmm. So I opened up my password manager and the RuneScape client next to each other, revealed my password and typed it in character for character, which is not an ideal experience, as you can imagine, especially if your passwords are 24 characters long.
Okay.
I got an error message. I cannot log in onto a member's world, of course, with my free-to-play account. And because I had logged in on a member's world with my previous account, the lobby was still attached to the member's right. world, and I was unable to log in. So I had to close the client, reopen it.
That happens every time.
Type in my password, character by character again. At least it had no symbols. So I got into the game. You get through the character creation process. That's all nice. And then you get into the game and you get this interface, and there is this weird button called subscribe. That's just there.
Oh, yes. Welcome to free to play, boy.
So after playing with my interface and putting that button in a place where it's not entirely in my face, I decided to start running around, and I opened up the world map. The world map was filled with icons that implied that I should subscribe. There was also in the home teleport interface, if you hover over an icon that is not a members only, or that is a members only, you will be sent to a subscribe interface. Then I did the quest. I had this problem where I could not make a hot ball of water because it was a member's item.
Well, they hotfixed that, so we can.
Well, they hotfixed it, but like.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how long you all have been with the game, but a couple of years back, we were in a very similar situation. There was a lot of interaction in game where if you would click it, it would say you have to be a member to do it, but it would remain intractable, and it was a confusing experience. And what Jared said, they said, we are going to change this. We are going to make it
yes,
so that free-to-play feels like a full experience. It should not feel like a demo for membership. Now, I'm going to let that sink in. I'm going to let people think about a big subscribe button on their screen, big subscribe buttons on basically every interface, and think how that does not feel like a demo.
You know, I'm actually going to include the screenshots that you sent me in the show notes, because that, you know, just tells it all.
Yes. So, I mean, this is really, really off-putting, and I'm not going to claim that I'm an expert on games, but I have seen some talks, I have read some theories, and what you want to do for this model where there is a free-to-play section and like a paid section is you want to make sure that people are only going to commit money to something if they like, only if they like playing it, if they have the opportunity to play it for free as well. Yeah. And the first thing you have to do in such a model is get the player engaged. If I have subscribe buttons in my face everywhere, that is off-putting and feels cheap, and it's not going to make me enjoy the game. Get rid of that subscribe button. Get rid of all the implications that I'm only playing a very tiny subset of the game.
And plus, you probably also get notifications for your daily treasure hunter stuff, which you can't claim unless you're a member.
I have not really had those, but I bet if I started playing again tomorrow, I would get notification like that. So, like, what you want to do in such a case is you want to have the player engage, have player enjoy the game. Like, make the free-to-play experience a full experience for as much as you can manage. And then maybe 2 days in, or maybe like a few hours into the game, you're like, hey, it seems like you're enjoying this game. We can give you much more, but you have to pay for it. And at that point, people might be saying, yes, I am enjoying this experience. Give me more. But right now you're in this experience. That's just, it feels like this really cheap mobile game, which has these references everywhere. And
you know,
I think it takes away from the free-to-play experience, and I'm sort of starting to see what the reason is that we don't see these conversion rates to membership that much.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, not to take away from what you're saying here, but the one image you sent me of the world map is really telling, because everywhere is one of our hotspots that we go. You know, Pryftinus, Kandarin, Feldup Hills, Karamja, so on and so forth. There's a subscribe button right there. And if you zoom out the entire world map, I mean, it's not really an easy way of seeing what's going on with all these icons just overlaid like that.
Yeah. It's really, really, really off-putting, and I think it has gone the complete wrong way. And we as members, I assume like most of the players here listening are members of the game, like paying for a subscription. We don't encounter this in our daily game, but this is a thing that I was exposed to today, and I just had to talk about it in the episode because it was so noticeable. Like, I thought going into the free-to-play game meant spam and botting, but I was not prepared for this. And in fact, I think I encountered two or three players while playing that quest.
Well, let me tell you, for instance, when I decided to make my main account member, that was like 2 years ago, I started my Iron Man account, which still is free to play, and I have dedicated a lot of time. And what you say about what you saw today about the subscribe buttons, it was worse. You can't imagine what it was at the beginning of when I started playing Iron Man. The world map was visible and everything was okay, but I don't know, sometimes I mean, at some point in 2015, all this started. And for instance, when you got a daily challenge, you opened the interface, you got the challenge. Oh, it was a member. So if you accidentally clicked on the member's daily challenge, it would open a tab into Internet Explorer and tell you to subscribe, that that membership had a lot of bonuses and whatever. And then, for instance, when they introduced the option for free-to-play to level up, for instance, Fletching to level 5, if you reach level 5 and gain 1 XP more, you would get a message saying that if you were a member, you would have gotten 20 more experience from what you are doing, you know? And again, another interface would open up. But I think that has been controlled, or it's not that aggressive. I have to agree with you that it's still aggressive, but not as it was. So credits to that, to Jagex, but also what you say is completely true.
I mean, I think the Iron Man experience is helping. Like, people playing new accounts is going to have, like, going to make possible improvements to the early game. because if you have a new player playing, by the time they're engaged enough to engage in the community, they'll be way past the initial stages. While if a player makes a new account, they can provide feedback on the early game experience. You'll get more players going through it, so you get this better feedback loop. But for a game like RuneScape that is so much based on their membership fees in terms of like income, your free-to-play experience, like your ramp up towards a subscription, like everything stands on converting a free-to-play player to membership. That percentage has to be as high as possible. That's what you want. That's the most important statistic in this game model. If you don't get a conversion to membership, that's not interest. Like, that player is of no interest to you.
Yeah, and they're not going to come back afterwards. So
this experience has to be perfect. Yeah, and I feel it has not gotten any love. Like, not a lot, not enough.
Yeah.
Attention.
And I mean, if they're not going to come back, then what does that mean? It's not like they're not going to look at the game at all in the future. And that's one potential subscriber that could make multiple accounts or bring more people in that's gone. So it is a genuine problem. And I'm glad we had this discussion here because it's not something we normally think about here. And it's been a long time since I've actually interacted with the free-to-play side of the game. So thank you for bringing this up, both of you. Really good. You ready to move on to some patch notes?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
Okay. So the Hero's Quest has also undergone rework, or let's just say some quality of life improvements this week. Most notably, while the partner gameplay has been retained, you can now complete the quest on your own by bringing a lockpick. So obviously this means rather than, you know, getting the other person to go into the door and work with the guard and whatnot, you just bring a lockpick and force a door, and that's the end of the quest. Or at the end of that part. You know, I don't know how I feel about this, because that was something combined with the Shield of Arath that, you know, really made for an early RS experience where you needed to reach out to someone else or get a friend to help you. And, you know, it kind of added a different a new level of immersion into the game. So I'm kind of disappointed that this is an option, but obviously they didn't remove the the partner aspect entirely. So,
may I offer you an opinion here?
Sure.
I understand the problem with Hero's Quest. It's an obstacle to get a partner, right?
Yes.
And I think that the reason they did it is that Jarrus looked at the completion statistics, looked at Hero's Quest, and saw that that is where people drop off. I think that's genuinely the case.
I would agree with that.
They wanted to fix this, and I do not say that the fix is bad. I actually think it's not a bad addition to the game. But, there is currently no added reward for doing this the way it was intended. There's no penalty for doing this as one player. So they say, well, the partner gameplay has been retained. Sure, but what is the added value of doing this with a partner now? It's only annoying. I think a better implementation would have been that you can do it on your own, but at a penalty.
You know, that would have been a great way of doing it.
I got to say something about Heroes and Arabs, because I remember when I first made completing Shield of Arab, I made a friend, I mean, of course, a virtual friend, because he plays RuneScape, but to this day, we remember back in 2007, 2008, when we did the quest together, because we didn't find any other partner. And you know what? Hero's Quest made me get into the clan I am now, which is Clan Quest, and stay in it. I mean, I see your point there, Sirion, but I also see that, for instance, it helped me, that both quests helped me to get one friend on one side and one clan on the other side. So I feel it's really important that this quest is now solvable. You know, I think the purpose of cooperating has been practically erased, because that's what you say. Mm-hmm. It's now getting a companion is just an annoyance. It's annoying to if you can do it on your own, why would you go and search mm-hmm. someone to do it with?
Yeah, entirely true.
I mean, for Shield of Arrow, I think you still need to like do sort of two. Like, it's going to take more time, but still, the extra time it takes you to do the quest, you spend more of that finding a partner. And I mean, Chota makes a really, really, like, personally interesting point in that getting a partner for Heroes Quest was an important factor in the influx of members in our quest. That's now completely gone, pretty much. And while I don't doubt that we will still be able to reach potential members, it is a way into the quest less, into the clan less. And it is sort of concerning to see where the game is going into a more single player focused experience.
Yeah, and you know, we've felt that for a long time as well. So, I mean, while I'm not saying that's a good thing that's happening, and while, you know, I think the MMO, massively multiplayer online game aspect of it should be retained, you can practically play RuneScape now in a shell if you want to. You can turn chat off, you can turn private off, you can do everything on your own. So,
yeah.
You can play an Ironman account, and then you literally are blocked.
On your own. Right. Oh, that's a terrifying thought. Okay.
So, yeah, like, conclusion, I think, is that while this change had to be made, it's really not well thought out and is currently harmful for the questing community in general.
Yes, that's right.
I want to say something completely aside, because Jusirion asked today the developer of the second rework. It's called Stuart. I don't know if you remember him, but that's it.
Mod Stuart. All right. Kudos to Mod Stuart.
All right. Also with the Heroes Quest, the oily fishing rod can now be reclaimed from Grant, and the ice gloves can now be reclaimed from the High Priest of Entrena. Those are two items you could not retrieve previously with the Heroes Quest.
And if you are like Shane and have no idea what you even need the ice gloves for, you need them for some bosses in Recipe for Disaster and, of course, the Dominion Tower.
Thank you for pointing that out.
And Desert Treasure.
Yes. Kenora and the origins of the Ice Queen are now mentioned in the Hero's Quest. You know, that's a pretty big lore change right there. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Would be nice to see how this all was fit in. So I'm happy about that. We already talked about the mugger near the Earth Altar. Adamant Dragons in the Brimhaven Dungeon now have the same chance to drop lore books as the Adamant Dragons in the Ancient Cavern already. It is no longer possible to gain more than 10 supplies worth of XP per day from handing in Gobi supplies. Handing in any more than 10 supplies will not give the extra XP, and the extra objects will be removed. I wonder how much XP this was bringing in. Anyone know?
No idea.
All right. Temple trekking tasks from the Mauritania task set now require the NPC be only taken on routes that match their difficulty. So,
as if the Mauritania task set was not annoying enough.
Yeah. Oh. So that means if you have a hard NPC, you can only take them on hard routes. Which, oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's the adequate thing. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm ever going to get this task set done.
I spend a good few hours on maxing my characters. I am only stuck on a Dominion Tower task, which is pretty much the only task that's worse than
Okay, I don't want to talk about those either. achieving maximum points, 100, in the Guthixian cache will no longer bring up a confirmation box when attempting to leave early. All right.
Good.
The augmented Saren Godbow now correctly says disassemble instead of destroy. That's a very good point. Telos' shockwave attack will no longer hurt you on the transitions between phases 3 and 4. One of you PVM people can explain that. I'm assuming it's one of you guys are PVM people. Chodo?
No.
Oh, okay. And we know Sirion's not, and I'm not either.
I have avoided Telos so far.
All right.
I have avoided every single boss I can.
Talos's so much power attack will no longer injure you if you get hit by it while transitioning from phase 1 to 2. So that seems like just basically, okay, we complete the phase, don't get hurt. And you can no longer elk or drop the demonic skull while in combat. And
well, that's important.
Yeah.
That's great.
Because, I mean, if you're in the wilderness and that happens, you don't want someone to get that from you. You can elk it and, you're not going to get 500k from me. Oh, well. And finally, the salty title will be now removed whenever and if new requirements are added to it. This includes the Honto armor pieces, hence those who have not yet purchased the pieces from Bonnie will be unable to activate the title. I bet they will be very salty about that.
I was about to say, I find it quite ironic because I think they'll be pretty salty about it.
That's great. Anything else from the patch notes that I might have missed?
It was the first patch note in a few weeks that had a substantial number of ninja fixes, didn't it?
That's right. That's right. Very true. Anyways, Jagex has also released data on the future name releases about when they're going to happen. So you can head on over to this forum topic and see the dates. Currently, the March 30th releases have happened. So on Friday the 31st, we're looking at S, and then rounding out with numbers on Friday the 7th, or numbers 5 to 9, and then numbers 0 to 4 on the 6th. I would not imagine there would be that many days or that many names with numbers starting with 0 to 4 or numbers 5 through 9. You don't really see those kind of names out there. So that was interesting. X, Y, and Z are all together on the 5th. S and T are on their own. So, Chode, are you changing your name at all this time around?
I've never changed my name. And when I checked just out of curiosity if I could change my name, I found out that I wouldn't be able to put my current name back because my name is kind of a bad word in some languages, which I didn't know when I was a kid and I created it. So I will never change it, just in case.
Oh, interesting. What languages?
It's in Argentinian. It's Spanish, but you only find it if you're living in Argentina, yes. I was quite surprised about this because... I mean, why? Why would you block? Why would Jagex block a name that it's on a foreign dialect? Because Argentinian isn't even a language; it's a part of Spanish. But I was quite surprised about it. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, Sirion, I heard some stuff about Dutch names in the past too, in game that were coming through censors. So yeah.
There was also this very, very long issue where many Dutch words sounded like rude English words.
That's right. That's right.
Like, even really, really vaguely. Like, I'm not going to repeat them because people are going to think we're terrible people in the Netherlands. But, like, some words were, like, really, really weird and you had to pronounce them really, really weirdly to make a rude word out of it. But they were still censored, even though they were amongst the most common words.
Yeah. One of our site moderators had his firewall that watched out for bad words tripped when the summoning post came out. Do you know what word that's referring to?
No.
All right. It was to do with the pickup sticks NPC.
Oh.
Anyways. You get it now, right?
What? Yeah, I get it now.
All right.
Let's move on.
So,
before you move on, I found out that not only with names, but with things you can write. I was in a fans chat, 2 days ago, and I was trying to type KK, like saying okay, and I typed 3 Ks instead of 2. And it was censored. I couldn't understand it at first. And
the Ku Klux Klan in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Afterwards, I realized that, but I found it interesting as well. And I don't know, just to mention it.
Oh, yeah. You know, there's the good old thing that if you go back to RS Pass, you can even type in the word Hitler, and that's censored. So Jagex did a lot of censoring back in the day. But you can turn most of that off now. All right, so just in passing, this week's Treasure Hunter update is bonus boosters from the 30th to April 3rd. Four potential bonus boosters. You can activate each of these once, after which a cooldown period is applied, and you can only have one booster active at a time. The Lucky Purple booster ensures that your next prize is from the purple category. The Multiple booster randomly boosts the number of prizes you receive up to 5x. The Extrasensory booster looks inside the displayed chest for rarity before you choose. And the Prismatic booster says that any lamps and stars that you receive will become prismatic. Also, with the Lucky Purple booster, it can grant access to a number of older discontinued items, including the Lucky Dragon Full Helmet, the Lucky Dragon Chain Body, the Lucky Dragon Plate Body, the Lucky Spectral Spirit Shield, the Lucky Arcane Spirit Shield, the Lucky Elysian Spirit Shield, the Lucky Divine Spirit Shield, Lucky Bando's Boots, Lucky Abyssal Whip, Lucky Dragon Claws, and Lucky Dragon Two-Handed Sword. So we haven't seen those for a while on Treasure Hunter, and you can now access them again if you use the Lucky Purple booster.
Yeah, but surprise, surprise, to unlock the Lucky Purple booster, you need to use like 200 keys to use it. And imagine if you use 200 keys and then you open one of the chests and you get a Lucky Bando's Boots drop. I wouldn't be happy about it.
No. You know, I think the multiplier booster is probably the best one that there is. Boost your number of prizes you receive up to 5. So,
that's good.
So
this week is all about getting lucky, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is, eh? You know, in some ways more than another, but all right. Well, that's it for RS updates this week. Folks, we're going to move right on to the questions right now. We got a couple of them, so I will read the first one. It's from Wolfie, who also resides in Clan Quest. So, since the new achievement system is coming out, and some of it was shown on stream, do you have any opinion about why this kind of system wasn't implemented before? I am not a game developer nor a programmer, and have very little ideas on the limitations of their platform, but it seems counterintuitive to have a list of achievements without having a progress bar or hints toward those achievements. So I suppose my question really is, why did the previous system have hints, have the hints tab, but none of the achievements actually had any hints nor progress indicators, whereas the new system seems simple enough to have been put into the game when the achievement system was initially reduced? Are introduced?
Well, I think first of all, I need to say that Wolfie is the type of player that loves progress bars on the game. But for instance, I really expect the achievements to be something. Pretty much, that's why I really like the task system, because you gotta do this task, but you don't really know how to do it, and then you have to look out, and you have to ask for help, or well, these days you just open your browser and put the wiki what to do with it. But for instance, when I was doing the temple trekking and I didn't understand some of it, of the points that were required of me, I got help from other players and I didn't need any hint offered by the system. I'm not saying I don't like the new system, how it's going to be implemented, but I don't mind the actual system.
So, you know, I don't know how I feel about that. I personally think that there maybe should be a progress bar to completing some of these achievements. And, you know, I think the reason they don't have it is because if you look at Xbox achievements or Steam achievements for various games, well, the Xbox ones don't, but the Steam ones do have progress. So that's I think they are just copying from the Xbox quite a bit in this. I mean, they even called it, in quotes, a gamer score style system when they were talking to players about this. So I think it's purely a decision made by Jagex here. And, you know, I mean, you're going to have tracking along the way to determine how far someone is to completing that achievement. Because internally, when you, you know, hit up on an achievement, say, oh, I don't know, make 50 clay pots, there needs to be a way to inform the user that that happened. So they definitely are tracking this stuff inside. It's just a choice to not put it out. Would you agree with that, Sirion?
I mean, we had a big discussion about how the achievements should be like a couple of weeks back. And this, I find it difficult. I find merits in the current system. I find merits in like all the achievement systems. And I think what Jagex needs to do is look at what the players want and what just sits well with the players. So I don't know.
What would you do? Would you show the progress along the way?
I would, I think. I think I like having visual indicators of when I'm doing something. Like, I like the feedback, and right now it just feels like a lot of guesswork has to happen.
Yeah, most definitely.
And see, there is two types of achievements you can have. You can have these achievements that you work towards actively and you do special stuff to get them, which is most achievements. But the other type of achievements is the things you just get for doing stuff.
Right.
For the second one, it's not really important to have a progress bar because like, you just get it at some point. You're not working towards it. While the other one, like you want to sort of have feedback even if you're only partially there. And with the new achievement system, it seems that they're looking towards a system that really helps you moving to like working on something.
Right.
Let's say there's an achievement, catch 100 chompy birds, right?
Right.
If you are at 90 catches already, that's going to make you a lot more likely to do that task than if you still have to do all of them. And that progress bar is actually going to make a difference.
Exactly. And that's my thoughts too. So, but at the same time, if you don't have progress bars, it basically comes up to a situation where you're just going to be doing stuff in RS and, oh, hey, I got an achievement. Lucky. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with the progress bar, you can kind of gear yourself towards treating them as requirements to complete. And, you know, in some ways, going from this angle, I think that not having the progress bars is actually better because we already have enough of a completionist mentality in the game and we don't need, what I think personally, more grinding in RuneScape to complete, you know, however many achievements are going to be released when this system comes out. So in some ways I agree with what they're doing here, but in other cases, like with your Chompy Bird example, I would definitely want to know how many I had left to do. So it's a mixed bag, really, and it depends on the achievement.
Yeah, and maybe there should be space for both.
Yeah. All righty. Anything else on Wolfie's question?
The answer of like why it was not implemented initially, right? Why was the achievement system what it was? The achievement system has sort of, it's hard to answer this, first of all, because I don't know what happens at Jagex or at, yeah, it's hard to backtrack that. But we have to consider like the whole path system thing was sort of added to it, and there was this achievements diary which used to be part of the quest tab, so this all sort of grew dynamically. And I'm pretty sure there were big plans for this whole system back then, but it was just cut because there wasn't enough time.
Yeah.
That's my guess.
And then it got messy, and now this is the grand cleanup of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Let's remember that the achievement system originally was the tutorial. When they took out, I don't know, first, it was Tutorial Island, then two or three other tutorials, and then when you appear in Lumbridge, you have the achievement system or the path system. I can't remember how it was initially called. And you have, like, I don't know, 30, 50 tasks that would get you into the game. And I think it was the direction that they wanted to give it. It's like at first a tutorial, and then it's just a compliment, things that you can add to your adventures or to what you're doing, to, I don't know, to maybe do something else. You don't know if to you are tired of bossing or questing. Well, I have, I don't know, Falador task to do, and the Falador shield is awesome, and I'll do them. And I think that was the original idea Jagex had. Maybe they didn't think to make it like this, because, I don't know, they wanted this way, and now they've come up with this new idea.
Yeah, could very well be.
So, I'm just, like, to reiterate what I said a few episodes back about a task system, what I hope is that this becomes a nice hub where you can pick up tasks, like, where there is maybe some daily variation, maybe even weekly or monthly variation, where it maybe funnels people to specific activities,
yeah, that would,
where it
that,
can
that would be
cater community,
yeah.
Where
yeah.
it can add variation to the game, where it can sort of provide options for people to do something they feel like, but also to give them ideas of things they might not think of themselves, and just cut out this whole grind attitude. Cut out this completionist attitude, and let's just go back and enjoy the game.
I would be 110% up for that. Would be very happy to hear about that. So, and you know, I think without having the progress numbers there, that's the way they go.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you, Wolfie. Next question's from Trekkie. Sirion, and you want to read this one?
Oh, sure. Ah, greetings, players of Kilinor. Come now, for we must go and reclaim Lumbridge. You see, soon after the dawn of the New Age, Saradoming and Zamorak fought a bloody battle and left a giant hole. Our mission is to go and clean it up and make it pretty again. A noob raises his hand. What about Edgeville? My family's home is still in shambles. When shall Edgeville get repair? It's a conspiracy. I thought I'd be spirited to that question.
Yeah, and you know, that is exactly how a RuneScape player, I think, would say it. And, you know, and specifically the noob, perhaps a noob from Clan Quest. And you know, that's a very good point, because, you know, I think the Dragonkin are pretty much finished in their story arc now. Like, what else is there beyond the Dragonkin from what we've seen? Right? Because they were kind of linked to the Majorat, and that ship has set sail.
And I think it's a really interesting question, because, I mean, how much time has passed since the Dragonkin made that mess in Edgeville? You might have broken homes or holes in the ground, but why the smoke? Does the smoke never vanish in Edgeville? And I think it's something they should have fixed long time ago.
Yeah, that happened after Ritual of the Majorat, right?
Yes.
Yeah, after Ritual of the Majorat, and that came out on September 2011. So, you know, 6 years ago.
Let me play devil's advocate here.
All
or
right.
Maybe I should just play the game developers. Lumbridge was destroyed in a world event. It looked the same for everybody.
Right.
You can't do a world event to fix Edgeville. It has to be a player-specific event, which makes it less powerful, which makes it less impactful, which means it's lower on the priority list.
You know, that's probably exactly the way Jagex looks at it.
I mean, I want it to be fixed as well. I would love if there maybe was like a short, lightweight quest, or like a mini quest, or just like some skilling activity you can do there to fix it up. I mean, it doesn't have to be a lot of content, but it's going to be gated behind some content, like some quests that are Grandmaster, I think.
Yeah.
So Yep. That's already a cutoff for players, so your audience is limited. And I think Jagger's doesn't find that there's something impactful coming out of it, so they're sort of like leaving it.
Yeah, and like you said, I wonder what the percentage of people who have completed that quest are. That would be an interesting number to know, because when you think about it, let's just see if it's going to be a majority of the population that's seeing it like this. And if not, like you said, if it's not a huge number, what would you say the threshold is? 70% maybe that would be required to do something like this? Like a world event to do
it? At least 50. Okay. Oh, a world event.
Or something, you know, just to clean it up, right?
I mean, it would be player specific, because otherwise you get lore problems. I mean, we have enough of those.
Yeah.
Let's not do
most
more
definitely.
Enchanted key stuff. Let's not do more enchanted key stuff. So it's going to be player specific, and you want at least, like, I don't know. It's hard, but you probably want at least a good. I think at least half the players have access to it or something.
Yeah.
Well, but the thing about it. For instance, when you have to do the beacon system and you go to the wilderness and you have to go up a ladder, the first time you go up the ladder, you can't because it's broken. So you have to bring, I don't know, 3-4 planks and fix it. Or what happened, I don't know, I can't think of any right now. But maybe make it like a separate task. I liked when you said when you were saying player like individual, every player could do it if they wanted. No, I don't know if a mini quest, but I don't know. You bring 2 planks and you fix I don't know the ceiling of the house, and you bring a rock and you fix the ground, and it would be like a small task to do. But I can see the point where you lead that in saying that not the 100% of people have completed a ritual of Mashrat, mainly because it's members only, and NGVD is a free-to-play area. But I think something could be done, yes.
I mean, it only is broken if you did the quest in the first place, so that's why it wouldn't make sense for people that didn't do the quest. But yeah. I mean, I'm going to say maybe something not entirely related, but for me, the destruction of Edgefield didn't really mean much. Like, there were no people dead. The whole place just looks a bit horrible, but it's still there in the exact same shape it was before, and all the characters are still there, so it doesn't really feel like that was impactful.
Yeah.
So it didn't do anything to me, so... The whole idea of destroying Edgefield fails seems like it failed. Like, it didn't have the effect Jagger's wanted. Maybe that's why they're not touching it anymore. But something like Lumbridge was way more impactful, way bigger. So, I mean, all in all, I think it's sort of a forgotten thing that maybe never really worked out. And
it's only a few people who care about it, like Trekkie, for example, here.
I mean, I would like to see it fixed, and I think some simple scaling activity where you have to like get some resources and do some skills, maybe get some people involved, like a mini quest thing might be nice. But then again, after doing Ritual of the Majaret, who's waiting for quests like that? I don't know. I guess.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Trekkie. If you guys want to send questions or discussion topics in, you can email them to questions@rsbnb.com. We also take text messages and voicemails at 571-57-BNB, which is 571-572-2632. All righty, so now comes the time of the show in which we look into tech news. So, users of Windows 10 are getting a huge upgrade on April 11th. That's when the Windows 10 Creators Update will begin to roll out to people. There's going to be a way for you to upgrade on the 11th if you want to get ahead of the rollout. But basically, the Creators Update is the sequel to the Windows 10 Anniversary Update. So this is a very large update for Windows, and it's practically a new version of the operating system. So this is, of course, in keeping with tune of what Microsoft said with Windows 10 being the last version of Windows. It'll be known as build 1703. And this update, what?
I'm just thinking that Windows 10 is the last version of Windows, and how basically OS 10 is pretty much the last version of Mac OS. There's something with that magic number 10 that's just really funny.
Yeah, they obviously want it to be the same on that. This update will include new consumer-focused features, including a new game mode, Beam streaming, which is a competitor to Twitch, Windows mixed reality support, new ebook and tab management capabilities in the Edge browser. Also, if you're using Windows 10 Pro, Enterprise, or Education, you'll be able to defer certain updates, such as the Creators Update or other large updates, for up to 365 days, and quality updates, that means security updates and fixes, for up to 30 days. So that's kind of caving to what people wanted. So if you're a Windows Power user, you will have Windows 10 Pro for that.
Really interesting that they hide that behind the Pro and...
Yeah, and you know, I mean, I can see why, because anyone who gets the home version is getting it on a pre-installed PC or device, or most people who build computers.
Well, I got the home version because I didn't see any reason of getting the Pro version, so
yeah.
I don't know.
And I
mean, but I don't mind the updates, to be honest.
Exactly. And the vast majority of people who use Windows 10 Home, you know, if they're in the settings of their PC and see the option to defer updates, they might click that, and that opens them up to security vulnerabilities and whatnot, which is something that you don't want. So I can see why they did that. Also, this Windows mixed reality support is what they are gearing up for the... what used to be called HoloLens. So basically now you'll be able to run these apps that developers create for HoloLens on this version of Windows 10 with their mixed reality platform. Another really... Another really interesting thing coming with this update is the support of Dolby Atmos, which basically allows you to simulate surround sound using stereo speakers. And... it's a really interesting piece of audio processing of what Dolby does, is that each sound in your game or whatever is treated as an object, and the system can say, I want to place this object in front of you, or have it pass through your left ear behind you, and that truly creates a sensation of full 3D surround sound with using stereo speakers. Blizzard's Overwatch game already does this with their own implementation of Dolby Atmos, and it is really amazing from a sound perspective experience. So with this coming to Windows 10, that means that any game that supports surround sound will be able to virtualize that out to a user with headphones, which is going to be something that's really interesting to hear for anyone who plays games out there with just stereo headphones, because then, whoa, I have these headphones, and now all of a sudden they can do full 5.1 surround sound, or at least a very close approximation to it.
I will not start asking all the technical questions, because I don't think people will get it, but it sounds like something that's interesting to read up to and see how accessible it is for a game developer.
Right. And, you know, it's really a choice that game developers will have to make. It's, do we go with the traditional 5.1 tracks of audio where, you know, we control and send stuff to different outputs and mark them as different speakers, right? Or do we actually go the full Dolby Atmos route and build that into our game where we let our game treat sound as objects and then let our game handle it rather than relying on Microsoft's implementation. So it's going to be interesting to see which way they go. And, you know, there's also going to be more extensions coming for the Edge browser as well. So maybe Edge will finally be able to be used with extensions. You know, it works fine for most things now, but you definitely need extensions if you're missing them. So Windows 10 update coming this April is definitely going to change the way we use Windows, and it's just another one of those stepping stones that Microsoft started 2 years ago when Windows 10 came out, and everyone thought, oh my god, we're going to have to pay for another version next year. And oh, lo and behold, that's not true. They kept their promise.
I mean, I'm happy with the update, but I'm also listening to this, and I mean, the Dolby Atmos thing is cool, but depends on like people actually using it. For me, as an end user on Windows 10, what's really changing? Like, There's nothing.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, if I had to pay for these updates, there's nothing in this list that would make me pay.
Right. Like, and you know, that's...
the only thing that might be interesting is the game mode. But given Microsoft's history with doing game stuff in Windows, I don't trust it. So I will update because it will make me, but I don't really feel excited about any of the changes. The only thing I am excited about is that it's free and that this shows that Microsoft really wants to support this platform. That's the only thing I'm excited about. But the actual features, for me as an end user, feel a bit meh.
Yeah. I mean, they also talked about the Surface Book and changes that they're making to that to make it run better. But they are also working on another update that's coming in the fall that'll probably be bigger than this one.
Mm, okay.
So. All righty. Chota, you got anything on this tech news story?
No, because I understand literally nothing except for the fact that I like what they are doing with the sound, but I can't say anything more than I like it.
All righty. Our next story goes to Facebook. Facebook has essentially copied Snapchat, and you guys will recall a few weeks ago that Snapchat is...
another one bites the dust. Yes.
Yeah, and you know, Snapchat put out their IPO, and they just got this picture-sharing thing right now with videos and whatnot, but Facebook copied them. So Facebook is essentially evolving from text and link sharing to visual communication, and they freely admit that Snapchat has pioneered this. So as of today, March 28th, or 2 days ago, sorry, March 28th, everyone has access to the Facebook camera feature that lets them overlay special effects on photos and videos. And, you know, that's exactly what Snapchat did.
Yeah, but let's remember that it's not only Facebook. Instagram and WhatsApp also implemented the stories to their servers, or however they're called.
Yeah, and, you know, I think now that Facebook is doing this, Snapchat has to worry because they just put out an IPO for a company that essentially just does this one thing. So the question is going to be for Snapchat, where is our value going forward?
This is exactly the question I was going to ask you. Like, with Facebook doing this, with Instagram doing this, and with WhatsApp doing this, which is free services a lot of people will already have, what is the added value in also having Snapchat? And I think Snapchat has to worry. And this is sort of also what Twitter had the problem with. Twitter did this one thing really well, and then you could also send like statuses on Facebook, and Twitter was not really necessary anymore to tell all your followers what you had for dinner that day, because you could do it on Facebook. So Facebook could do all these things, or Twitter that does this one thing, which would you choose? And I think Snapchat.
People are just going to do it on Facebook now, because if you can do it in one app, why not just do it in the same app that you're always in, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
And I think the only thing you can sort of do to prevent this is to do it either really, really, really well in comparison to Facebook, or to do something unique. And if you do something unique, you have to be careful that it's not copied. You have to always stay ahead of your competition, which puts Snapchat in a really vulnerable position, because it's now up to them to innovate.
Yeah,
yes, that's what Snapchat has to do.
Right.
Snapchat has to be the innovative.
And you know what's really interesting about this is that if you look at Snapchat, Snapchat's key difference right now is its presentation of brands and companies. Like we did that one time we were talking about Snapchat. If you go into the featured stories, you got stories from, you know, like Vox, CNN, and the Food Network and whatnot on Snapchat. Whereas with Facebook, you're tied specifically towards your friends, at least for right now, until brands and whatnot begin doing it on Facebook. So that's where Snapchat is ahead right now. But if you look at brand presence on Facebook, pretty much every major brand out there has a Facebook page. So they're going to be able to hook into this right away.
Well, but that's also something that WhatsApp did, that the thing that you could only share your stories with your contacts But, well, WhatsApp is exclusively a text application. Well, text, you, of course, you can send videos and images, but it's mainly just a communication device, and they've added the stories only to appear to your contacts, and they erase, I don't know, 24 hours later or something like that. So it was pretty different compared, for instance, to Instagram. I don't know. I really don't use them, so I can't throw much light into the subject.
Right. And, you know, this was actually inspired by Instagram success. Apparently, Instagram Stories has 150 million daily users. So if those guys are already on the Facebook platform, there we go. It's also worth noting that Facebook attempted to acquire Snapchat, but was ultimately... Oopsies. I pressed play there, and that isn't what we wanted to hear. But, you know, as I was saying, Facebook tried to acquire Snapchat, but failed. So this is how Facebook pays Snapchat back, by copying them and implementing their core product within to one of their main apps.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I guess that's the way they go. They eat their competition, and no one really innovates except for copying one another in all these companies. Because when was the last time we had a major innovation out of Twitter or Facebook? It hasn't happened this year, right? Or last year. So.
Nope.
And, you know, that's going to be what kills Facebook and Twitter eventually, is that they fail to innovate and fail to adapt, just like species do. They're going to find themselves up against something else that they don't know how to compete with and that they can't copy directly and successfully. And that's going to wither their power eventually. But alrighty. You guys ready for our third tech news story that I've kept kind of a mystery since we began here?
Let's go.
I have a guess what it might be.
All right. Okie dokie. So, I'm going to just quote from the article here, and then you'll get it as soon as I read it. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Following the explosive launch of the Galaxy Note 7 that was discontinued late last year, but now refurbished phone could make a comeback as Note 7's in India, Vietnam, and Africa this June. So
I knew it was Samsung related. I knew it.
So basically what Samsung is doing is they're taking all of the returned Galaxy Note 7s that were liable to exploding last year, fixed them, and now they're going to be selling them as refurbished units in India, Vietnam, and Africa this coming summer.
So, very clever.
It really is, because, I mean, you have what was a flagship phone device at the time, and because it's a refurbished product and you know what the stigma of that product was, you can't necessarily take it to the first world market of Canada, the US, and Europe, and Japan, and China. But you can take it to the budget markets where you can sell refurbished devices and the demand is high for cheap or lower cost smartphones. And what you're getting with this device is ultimately going to be very huge in terms of value just based on that alone. So
what is going to be really interesting, I think, like if you look at the markets like on these countries like India and Africa, is that the devices there are really low end. Like I get some exposure to that at work because app stuff is important, right? And those phones are something you would expect like 5-10 years ago maybe, but not anymore. But they're still alive. And now you get this influx of some phone that's only a few months old, which might change the landscape completely.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Samsung has reportedly around 2.5 million of these Note 7s left over. And, you know, it could, you know, update the cases and change the batteries on them. And then with this, they could sell them as, you know, new practically, but they're going to be quote-unquote refurbished because they're entirely changed. And, you know, Samsung confirmed this, and they said that all of the units they received, they're actually going to recycle. So it's not just the old ones that they still had in stock they're going to change. They're also going to recycle the ones that were returned to them. Obviously not the exploded ones, but the ones that they received that had not exploded yet will be recycled and changed into the new content. They also said that the product details, including the name, technical specification, and price range, will be announced when the device is available. Samsung will not be offering the refurbished Galaxy Note 7 devices for rent or sale in the U.S. And I mean, obviously they can't do that because of the whole stigma behind it. And I mean, even if you scroll down to the article here, you can see the first example of where it happened and set the Jeep on fire. And everyone who listened to the podcast here in 2016 knows how much fun Sirion and I had with this.
We had so much fun with that. Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a use for them. And, you know, I think one of us asked, what is Samsung going to do with all of these devices that get returned to them? Well, here we are. They're going to be refurbished into developing nations. So, and, you know, just a refresh on the spec, it's an 8-core, 2.3 gigahertz chip, 4 gigs of RAM, 64 gigs of storage, micro SD support, a 5.7-inch quad HD 2560 by 1440 display, and enhanced water resistance, coming with Android 6. So, I mean, this is not your run-of-the-mill smartphone. This is a smartphone that was capable of competing with the iPhone 7 that they're going to be introducing into this market. And, you know, I think that's something that Apple definitely needs to watch out for, because when you think about it, Apple loves going after emerging sections of the market. Just look at what they did in China a few years ago with the iPhone. So,
I mean, this might make a huge impact on like the adoption rate of Samsung and Android in these emerging markets. It's very clever, and I mean, it's in the end, it's a win-win situation for everybody except for Apple.
Yeah, and I mean. And I mean, us, unless they start exploding again, but we'll save that story for the summer.
If it happens, I want to be on that episode.
We'll do. We'll make that arrangement. I was wondering if you'd catch what this story was going to be, but
I did not know the exact story, but like I did realize it would be something Samsung related because there were a lot of Samsung announcements last week. So,
alrighty. And I believe you have one final quick mention of tech news before we wrap the show up.
Yeah, so I want to say that during this podcast recording, there was this historic event where for the first time ever in history, a first stage rocket, like orbital class first stage rocket, has been reused after being in space and landed. So SpaceX has used a Falcon 9 that was used before to launch a payload into space.
Yeah, this is the one that resupplied the International Space Station this week, right?
Yes. So this is not a new rocket. This is one they landed, put new fuel in it, and it's going again, and it landed again. And this is huge. This is going to cut costs on space travel so much. This is a really important milestone. And it happened while we were recording this. So once more, RSBNB update is part of history.
Right on.
So I'm really excited. So that's why I was sort of distracted partly during this episode because I was following the tweets on this. But yeah, super exciting. I think they're going to no longer use this stage anymore because they're going to switch to a slightly different model. But yeah, this is monumental and I had to share it.
Nicely done. Alrighty. Well, on to other things. We have our Skill of the Month update, the last Skill of the Month update for March. JamAndy52 is still in first place with 48.4 million thieving XP gained. Undoer is in second place with 13.3 million XP gained. And Flash is right behind with 13 million XP gained in third place. And the skill of the month for March 2017 is Hunter. I'm not a fan of Hunter, but if you're a fan of Hunter, you still got, you probably don't have much time to sign up for this unless you're listening to this on Friday. Sign-ups always close the last day of the month, so that's why this week is kind of awkward for getting you guys to sign up if you are listening to this podcast. But the April Hunter skill of the month will have begun by the time the majority of you are listening to this. All right, we do have some achievements this week. I'll take the first four, and then you guys can split the others. Sound good?
All right.
Actually, I'll take the first five, sorry. So, on March 29th, Charla Lambo 7 got 99 strength. Same individual, Charla Lambo 7 got 99 defense on the 28th. Then, Ms. Conan 10, 99 prayer on March 27th. Continuing on through March 27th, we have Dom the Mexican with 99 runecrafting and Rorok with 99 construction on March 26th. Sirion, you get the next few.
Chara Lambos has been busy and also got 99 prayer on March 26th. Choto, you got 99 fishing on March 25th. Congrats.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much.
Giovannic got 99 Hunter on March 25th, and also on March 25th, Happy Punge got 99 Fishing.
All right, Chota, you want to grab the last four?
All right, in March 23, Touchpad Pro got 120 Woodcutting. Well, that guy is completely mad. congratulations to him or to her. Miss Conan 10 got 99 Summoning March 23, too. And the other ones are also March 23 was a nice day, I see. Dom the Mexican got 99 summoning too, and Simba Kuro got 99 farming. Congratulations to all.
Good job, especially on that 99 farming. I always love congratulating those.
Yeah, I will spare any comments on that.
All right. do one of you guys have a pick of the week, Choto?
Well, after you told me about what the pick of the week was, I took a look at my library here, and I saw something that is quite old, but maybe not anyone knows about it. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Terry Pratchett.
Mm-hmm.
He's, for those who don't know, is an English writer, and I have here a copy of The Color of Magic, which is the first number of the Discworld novel. I'm going to read the back of the book so you can see what it is about. It says, in the beginning there was a turtle. Somewhere on the frontier between thought and reality exists the Discworld, a parallel time and place which might sound and smell very much like our own, but which looks completely different, particularly as it's carried through space on the back of a giant turtle, sexed and known. It plays by different rules. But then, some things are the same everywhere. The disc's very existence is about to be threatened by a strange new blight, the world's first tourist, upon whose survival rests the peace and prosperity of the land. Unfortunately, the person charged with maintaining that survival in the face of robbers, mercenaries, and, well, death, is a spectacularly inept wizard. And I quote something that the Independent said, one of the best and one of the funniest English authors alive, and the Daily Express said Pratchett is a comic genius. I highly recommend it. It's one of the greatest books I've ever read, and I've still got like 40 to go in this series. So well, there you go. I hope that you read it, and sometimes you can comment something to me, and we can talk about it.
Thank you. It's been a while since someone chose a book for the pick of the week, and I like what you read about that. So I've put a link in the show notes where people can find that book at Amazon.com. So give that a read if you guys are looking for something to read while playing RuneScape, I guess. I mean, you could do that, right?
Especially yes. If you're doing the arc.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. All right.
Yeah, and remember, Netflix is not the only thing you can do while playing RuneScape. You can also read.
Yeah, it's not. It doesn't have to be Netflix and Kill or Netflix and Slay. So.
Yeah.
Why?
You were the one that first brought it up, so.
Yeah, and then you started using it everywhere.
All right. Thank you, Chodo, for the pick of the week. So what have we been doing? We'll start with you, I guess. What have you been up to this week on RS?
Well, I leveled fishing to 99. You've seen that. And I've also been grinding my invention levels. And now that I found that you need 107 for Lack of the Dwarves, I might get more involved. But I've been Netflixing too much, and my gains have gone, I don't know, a bit slow. But I've got a nice week. As always, I play when I have time, and it's nice always to have the distraction of RuneScape or any other game, but mainly RuneScape. So I think that's me.
All righty. How about you, Sirion?
What have I been doing? That's a good question. I've been exploring the Ark a bit. I haven't really visited some of the islands they added in Batch 2, so I did that, unlocked some birds and some... Oh, yeah, I started doing the seeding seed stuff. That's actually quite interesting, where you have to like cross-pollinate to get new seeds.
Yeah.
That's actually sort of an interesting mechanic. I'm just too impatient, so I looked up all the combinations instantly. But still, it's an interesting mechanic. So
I just wish the fruit that came from them was useful.
Yeah, true. It's just I want to get all the seeds. Feels like a fun thing to do. So there's definitely some interesting content.
Did you unlock the gnome glider on that island?
No, I did not. Is that even possible to unlock?
Oh, yeah, it is. You have to catch...
It looks like a gnome copter, though.
No, it's a gnome glider. Let's see, I forget where it was, which island you need to, what the name of the island is, but it's on that dark island with the castle. If you that, what's that island name, Chota? Do you recall?
Oh, no, I don't even know. I explored the Ark less than Sirion, so imagine.
All right.
Okay.
You have to unlock Azealia Oakheart, of course, named after Amelia Earhart, on one of the islands, as you know, the various castaways. So once you rescue Azealia Oakheart, you get access to the gnome glider on Twilight, and then you can gnome glide from Prif directly to the Ark.
That's great.
Okay. Well, yeah. I'll look out for that. Thanks.
Yeah, that's actually
I've been doing a bit of that.
That's actually a really good way to do the seeds, by the way, because that's what I do when I'm wanting to do seeds. I just go straight from Prif, use the gnome glider, and I'm there.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I'll keep it in mind. I've also found a new Uncharted Island, which has everything really close by. It even has three of the divination spots overlapping, so that's really, really compact. But otherwise, the end of the month is coming up again, so that also means... Always means a bit of increased effort towards the clan to get everything ready for April. So that's probably what I will be working on while
April 1st.
I'm afraid I'm not allowed to say anything about that, but I have heard from some internal sources there might be a big announcement on April 1st.
Oh, I forgot something, and this is good news for our PVM. Groups there, especially Xenon, if you are listening to me, I have killed Vindicta for the first time, so sorry for cheating you, but it had to be done.
Oh, right. I did that last weekend as well. I joined Xenon in killing Vindicta, and we decided that I am basically a bad luck charm when it comes to drops, because I think I've never gotten as many drops. So what I'm now trying to do is I'm trying to get people to not take me on PVM trips and then give me part of their loot. Because otherwise, I'll
You know what? I'm a good chum, because one of the friends I went to Vindicta, he got two pets. The one from Gorvek and the one from Vindicta. And I got nothing, of course. But... And when Alpha, who is a guest in Clan Quest as well, he took me to Nex. He got something, I can't remember what it was, but I think, yes, I might be a lucky chance after all. Maybe I have no, the luck I don't have, I give it to other players. I'm so generous.
All right. Well, I guess that brings it up to me then, if you're done, Shoto, unless there's anything else.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm done.
All right. This week for me on RS, just been doing the herb farming. I did a couple, just one elite clue scroll. Those are actually quite fun to do, actually, so I would highly recommend that after the treasure trail spike in items. Unfortunately, I didn't get any of the items I was after, so that's too bad. But it's a good way to get around and see the rest of the RS world. I am looking for methods of herb lore. If anyone out there has any good suggestions that don't ding the pocketbook too bad, I'm looking for another one to add to my repertoire of super prayer renewal potions. So if you want to do that, you can send those in by way of question or private message on the RSBNB forums. But aside from that, I don't think there's too much else to mention. I think we're good for this episode of RSBNB Update then. So thank you, Chodo, for joining us on this podcast. It was a pleasure having you.
Well, thank you both for having me. And, well, we'll see what comes out of this episode.
Yes, indeed. All right, Sirion, always great as usual to do these shows with you. And with that being said, thank you for sharing your time with us, everyone. And we will see you next week for another episode of RSBNB Update.
See you next week.